Hello there. We're not starting with music, not yet. And it's because I just wanted to make a note about last Friday. And it governed my entire weekend. I was very depressed. And I'm referring to the attack in New Zealand on two mosques by a hateful man. I would not say his name. But at the end of the attack, we had 50 people, and it may continue, the toll may continue to rise, killed, including children. Well, I'm not interested in cases like these of trying to find out why he did it or what motivated him to do it and so forth. But it's sufficient to say that the reaction from around the world proved that he is the anomaly. He is the exception to the generally accepted rule that we should accept each other. The act was beyond egregious. It defies words. You can't find words. But in the meantime, the burials, as the bodies are being released, the burials continue. And people are trying to their best to return to normal. You can't return to normal in a situation like this. But we understand. We understand that their lives were just totally disrupted on last Friday. They will never be the same. They are strangers in a strange land. And yet they have to pull it together to go on. It's an awful situation for anyone to be in. But it is the result of the hatred, just absolutely undiluted hatred. And then people with this sickness justify it to themselves and to others like them that they're doing what they're supposed to do to get rid of people who are infecting their perfectly white world. So I say that one of the things that we can do may have just a telepathic effect, but we have no other ways at the moment to deal with these things except send out good thoughts to those who have died, those who have been wounded, to let them know that we are thinking of them. And we support them, even if it's just in this way. Just take a moment and, out of respect for those who have died, those who are suffering, those who have been injured, we just say, we love you. You did nothing wrong. You were in a space where you were about to withdraw from the world and tend to your spiritual life. That's very noble. So we'll take this minute and just send good thoughts their way, and then we officially start the program today. Listening to Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're about to deal with another issue here of evil, just plain evil. And I wanted to update you. You're waiting for our guest, and he should be joining us soon. Let me just double check here. Make sure we... All right. What we're going to be talking about today, when we are joined by our guest, is evil on this side of the world. And we've been covering this subject for a long time, and it has to do with foundations, how foundations work. And how they, in recent years, have been working to really contradict their intention and, in fact, the law of foundations and philanthropy. Philanthropic organizations or nonprofit organizations are given special dispensation under the law to solicit funds. To raise funds. And these funds, it is understood, are supposed to be supporting their operations and providing for their needs. The main thing is that they are, okay, I just got some news here. Okay, so we have a situation where these organizations enter into a space that is evident, and that space is about evident need. And so when the government gives special dispensation, it does so recognizing that this entity, whichever entity it dispenses that special dispensation too, is filling an evident need. So it is saving the government money. It is private citizens who are doing this work of helping other people. They are not looking for government help. The organizations are believing that what they're doing is something that they themselves can finance, so they don't have to worry. They don't have to worry about waiting for government grants and so forth. And I'm not knocking government grants by any means. I think we don't have enough of them. But I'm explaining the whole idea behind philanthropic work, behind those nonprofit organizations. But increasingly, in the past several years, we have seen that these nonprofit organizations are not operating on the up and up. And they have become cesspools for corruption. We've talked about the Clinton Foundation in this regard, in which billions, with a B, billions of dollars raised to do all kinds of grandiose things all over the world in service of people who are at risk, in all kinds of ways at risk. And what was driving the foundation idea was that people would be inclined to give in order to support this work. You would find something very interesting about this level of philanthropy, and that is that you have very highly visible people who are also highly credible people. They have credibility because the media gives it to them, or they have occupied a particular role in our society for a long time and have built up through news coverage a reputation so that people trust them. They are trustworthy. And that's the way it goes. They become trustworthy, and this is the engine, the first piece of the engine that is needed. You have people who are trustworthy. The second part of it is that they have a hook, a great hook. And by hook, I mean, well, excuse me. By hook, I mean they have something that encourages people, appeals to people's higher spirits, higher selves. Now, you and I may not want to, or we may not engage in philanthropic activities every day. But through an organization, you will be encouraged to do just that. They make it easy for you. Just send them a check, or, you know, do the card thing. And you feel better because you would have contributed to a worthy cause. And they feel better because they are the worthy cause. So this is how it works. You have it operating on a small scale. You have it operating on a large scale. And today I want to talk about that. Actually, our scheduled guest has had a hiccup and will not be able to join us just yet. we hoping that eventually that would happen. But we can talk about this because it is an important subject. It tells us how often in real life we are played. We are played all kinds of ways, and there's big money in it. Now, you're hearing about the situation in colleges and the bribing and all of that that's going on by wealthy parents who want their children to enter particular colleges, Ivy League colleges, and have every advantage, because at the end of that will come the incredible resume. And the resume now will go on to substantiate why that person is better suited than you or me for a particular job or responsibility, because they're very well educated and so forth. That is not true. It may not be true at all, but it appears to be true. And the appearance of truth in some cases is as good as the real thing. It's as good as the real thing. You go through law firms and you go through their bios, and you can't believe how very educated these people are. But if you have a chance to sit down with these folks, if you have a chance to talk to them, sometimes you wonder, oh, how did they ever get through school? How did they ever get to work at such and such a company, a law firm? How did they ever do that? So let's talk about that. We're going to talk today about what your notion is of philanthropy. And what do you think it is supposed to do? We have talked a lot about it, and it is going to be factoring very keenly in our continuing discussions, because things are developing in the philanthropic world. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. We take a short break and come back to your thoughts right after this. Listen to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. We're talking about what your notion of philanthropy is, or what the notion of philanthropy is. What do we understand about this thing called philanthropy or charitable works? What is it that we are supporting when we do that? And what do you think is happening in the philanthropic world? Do you think it is running smoothly and everybody's paying their taxes and filing their required forms and so forth? But, you know, not the little things that we do every day as philanthropy. You give a dollar here, you give a dollar there. That is philanthropy, but on a very, very small scale. We're talking about the large picture, about how companies have come to view philanthropy as, in fact, a very profitable proposition. And is it time that we have an overhauling of our notion of philanthropy Do you think it is being regulated properly? Do you think that people are doing some very strange things under the guise that they're doing charitable work? What say you? What say you? What feeling do you have of a company that continues to talk about its philanthropic work? And yet, you know, our intention is good. We do not have suspicions right away. But should we develop a kind of attitude about that, that we should check on these organizations and what they're doing, because very often it is not good work, but it is making a lot of money. It is keeping friends and family employed. It is touting works that may or may not have been performed or accomplished. And more we see it attached to organizations we just didn't expect. For example, you have a political candidate setting up a philanthropic operation. Or you would have a company with a highly suspect reputation in the community relying more and more on its philanthropy. We have in the case of Donald Trump, his daughter, and Jared Kushner, her husband, stressing heavily their philanthropic work without us getting a picture of what exactly is the philanthropic work that you're doing. Where is the money coming from? What are the forms that they're supposed to file? We've talked about this ad infinitum about the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation not having filed any reports, and yet taking in hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars that we don't know where they go. And in fact, it caused us to wonder whether this is one of the newest fads going, the best way to make a lot of money without anybody checking. The government doesn't have the resources to check into these foundations and what they're doing. So many foundations actually do whatever they want to do. I don't understand it. I don't understand why it is happening. But more and more, you see people from the for-profit world venturing into the non-profit world with charities. And we don't know what they do. We have no idea what they do. What makes them legitimate? They're not posting reports. They're not filing public statements so that people can check and double check them. So this is an issue I think we need to pay attention to. What are you thinking about charities? And this is just a lead up to a major story we'll be breaking here. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Do you feel safe in knowing, and the fact that certain companies have a philanthropic presence or tie to the community, and yet you don't know what they do? You don't know what exactly it is that they are providing as a service that entitles them to all of these benefits as a tax-exempt organization, and yet we don't know what they're doing. It's a massive fraud, massive fraud. You know, this makes this university issue, bribing issue, look like nothing. It is massive fraud. Massive. So we have to start asking the questions. We are the ones who should be saying, well, wait a minute. You came into our community in such and such a year, and you announced that you were going to be doing certain things. This, you know, you just run, it runs the gamut. You have athletes and actors and politicians and social service organizations. You have all kinds of people in our communities all the time. And yet we are so poor. Ed from Queens, what are your thoughts? Hello, Ed.
Hello, Yatrice. How are you?
Okay. What are your thoughts about it?
Pertaining to philanthropic organizations and charities, in my career, I've worked for a couple of them. I'm not directly involved in the process of fundraising or the work that they did basically in the maintenance department, because I'm a mechanic, I'm a technician, and I've worked in some of the facilities. But you get to see the inner workings of the facility and exactly what's going on. And I think the society is in mass is experiencing a dumbing down of understanding what the function of a philanthropic organization is supposed to be. We don't have a...
You mean philanthropic?
Say again?
You meant philanthropic.
Philanthropic, yes. Sorry, I'm not spoken. But they lose focus on what exactly these organizations are supposed to do. They're supposed to be for the betterment of the community on the whole. They're supposed to be servicing a specific lacking need in the community and facilitating that need to improve the quality of life. So we can have a certain quality of life and the humanity towards one another, and they're not doing that anymore. Everything's being driven by profit. Even though these are quote-unquote nonprofit organizations, some of these organizations I work for, they have a profit margin. They don't call it a profit margin, but they call it what one organization used to call it was, I forget exactly what they had a verbal twist for it, like revenues allocated or revenues not committed to certain things. And these things turn into profits. And a lot of times these organizations, they change, their heads change because there's a corruption or a scandal going on. And to keep the quote unquote integrity of the organization, they'll just allow people the opportunity to gracefully bow out and resign when they were head and shoulders in the corruption, the giving of jobs to certain contractors, the bidding, the limited bidding for certain jobs with projects that they're related to where they've got outside funding for. So, I mean, it's corruption is coloring everything in this world, in my opinion, unfortunately. And charity, there's a lot of money to be a poverty pimp. That was a term that came back in the, they used to be back in the 60s. There's a lot of money you can make off of poor people. And this country, and unfortunately, some of these organizations are famous for it.
Are there organizations in your community that you are not clear about in terms of their philanthropic activities?
Oh, yeah, there's a few. There's a few. The YMCA, I'm not sure about their philanthropic activities. I mean, they're an institution that's been around for a long time, but I know a lot of the outreach that they used to have when I was a child is limited. It's gone. You know, and donations are still prominent. And if you look at certain areas in Brooklyn, for example, in Park Slope or certain other areas in Brooklyn, you'll see a large presence. And in Bed-Stuy and Brownsville, you'll see a lower presence. Used to have community centers that were open at night to play basketball. They're not there anymore. Used to have athletic outlets for children. They're not present anymore. And the revenues still keep on coming, so it makes you wonder. You know, it makes you wonder. It makes you wonder.
Well, thank you for getting us started today on the subject. Thanks so much. It is important.
Yeah.
It is a good gesture when organizations and even individuals step in to respond to an evident need. And I don't want us to communicate that we think all charitable organizations are bad. Absolutely not. Quite the opposite. Some charitable organizations, if they don't exist, if they don't do the work that they're committed to doing, I have no idea how bad things can get. Many people are, and families even, are saved by the idea that they can get help if things should come to it. They can get help. There's some kind of a cushion. And that has been the case for a long, long time. You can look in certain cities or certain areas and you would see how vital it was that these organizations existed because they literally saved lives. They literally saved people from starvation and from homelessness and all the other tragedies, the social tragedies that we see all the time. And so they are to be commended for doing that work. And many, I would say, if not most, of the charitable organizations are following in that path because that's been their history, that's been their contribution, and the community recognizes it and would support it. But we have a lot of organizations today that say they are functioning in that tradition of philanthropy, and we can't see it. We can't see it. Or that philanthropy has become, you know, I'll give you a check. The such and such corporation gives you a $1,500 check, and that becomes philanthropy. I'm not so sure that it is. Here in South Florida, there is a major foundation, the J.M. Moran Foundation. J.M. Moran was a philanthropist and a businessman and became known, in fact, for his work in the community, building centers for young people to come to after school, involved in sports, involved in extracurricular activities and study programs and so forth. So that's been going on for a long time. And the company, which is the auto company that he owned, made this. This is a prominent part of what they do. It's a major thing. So on that level, you have people who are dedicated. And because of their dedication, so many children benefit. Not just children, but, you know, they have different kinds of programs catering to different age groups. So that is very helpful. I'm looking, however, and I'm not going to name any names, but I'm looking at the trend that is developing because it is growing. Especially in African American and in Latino communities, you have these organizations that are sprouting up all over the place saying they are engaging in philanthropic activity to help the community. And yet when you ask them, well, where are you investing? What are you putting the money toward? What services are you offering? How long do you intend to offer them? I mean, then they get angry. They get very, very angry. But it is a big money maker. You have firms that are developing now that are strictly in the business of trading, getting people out there, you know, doing the PR work, getting them to be known so that sooner or later, when they establish their quote foundations, unquote, it provides a nonprofit arm for them to make for-profit money. This is happening a lot. Do you know of any such thing that is happening? We won't name names because I would need to see some paperwork on it. But if it is your experience that you are seeing this too happening in your community, you have people, you know, they may be sports figures. They may be, you know, high profile people. They may be actors, not well known necessarily, but actors. And they all have, quote, foundations, unquote. Have you been caught up in one? Have you found something going on in these foundations that would cause you to wonder? I've been to some social gatherings, and I could tell you immediately there was something wrong. If you're running a foundation and you're having, you know, one of your social gatherings at a ritzy hotel, and I mean, you're not all the way up there. Your donors are not expected to be in the $50,000 to $100,000 range and higher, but you're running a little thing to raise money. But you can go into the hall and you can see right away that this is not a good event. This is not a legit business. The money is being spent in the food and beverages and in the venue and everything except in conserving and saving and going, you know, several steps down to keep costs contained and to maximize the money that you can make from any event. They're not interested in that. They want the event to be a big deal. And so they market the event. The money goes into the event, and then there's very little left, if any at all, to invest in whatever it is your charity is. So charity work isn't necessarily charity. Charity work serves as a basis for a lot of other agendas, and they're not good. But in the meantime, we don't have people paying attention to it or asking for an accounting. This is particularly notorious in churches. Churches are themselves a nonprofit. And, you know, many times churches would give events and you don't see the result of where the money allegedly raised during these events would go. And then you'll get the story that, well, you know, we underestimated costs, or we didn't have the turnout that we needed, or some other thing that would say, hey, you know, we didn't make the money. But it does make money, except that nobody knows. Nobody knows where it goes. So you have this eternal problem in our communities of people looking at the possibilities. It's rife with possibilities to market to these distressed communities, to get them to believe that there's a viable program trying to get off the ground if only you support it. And then they take that support, even if it's only just verbal support, to entrepreneurs and business people, and they get more money. Okay, but where is the money going? When was the last time that you asked for an accounting of any money related to a nonprofit that you know of or have been involved in? When was the last time? When was the last time a nonprofit that you knew actually accounted for money raised? And money raised in connection to an identifiable need. When was the last time? It may be as simple as trying to buy book bags and backpacks for students. You'd be surprised at what people are doing to sell an idea on the backs of poor people. We need backpacks for children. We need having a summer camp. All these kinds of wonderful ideas. And they literally market. They market poor people. They go out and sell the idea that you'd be doing a great thing if you donate $10,000, $15,000, whatever you could manage. And then there would even, some of them, they would even produce bogus reports with pictures yet of how successful the effort has been. These companies are not sending anybody to check on anything. They just want you out of the way. You just get off our backs and put it on record that we gave you $5,000. And we're done. And this is what is going on in our community. So we are going to bring you a report today that really, really focuses on this business of philanthropy in poor communities and what is going on. It's a major story. Our guest has not yet been able to break himself free of what is going on now to join us, so we'll be talking. So I'll open up the lines so you can talk about whatever you wish for the rest of time, and then we resume tomorrow. 888-874-4888 is the number to call to talk about whatever it is you wish to. We have at least 20 minutes or so. You can express your opinions about anything in the news today. Sometimes, you know, these things happen and there's no way to see them, to foresee them happening. In fact, I confirmed just this morning and everything was all ready to go. But something happened, because it is not like this guest to just not connect. So whatever it is, we'll check and find out and hope that it was not something severe. But in the meantime, we have time that we could talk among ourselves. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. Whatever is on your mind, we'll just go free form for the remaining time. Okay. I'm laughing at myself. I'm laughing at myself because this was not supposed to happen. But this is life. I want to remind you soon, I'll be giving you more information on it. I'll be in New York. I've been invited by the Community Church of New York to share some wonderful moments with you. And I'm looking forward to seeing you there. I'll give you more specific information. But I will tell you, the last time I was there, it was unbelievable. It was great. And I think we shut down the church because the church was supposed to close up much earlier than it did. But people wanted to just stay and talk, and it was just delightful, really delightful. So I'm hoping that we will repeat that energy and that vibe. It's going to be in May, and I'll give you more details on that. Hello, Ernie. You're on the air.
I can't stay too long because I have an appointment shortly. But I just wanted to comment on the shooting that happened in New Zealand, I think it was New Zealand, in the church.
Yes.
The
And a mosque. In mosques.
The mosque. And that is the thing that I'm a little confused with. Has the name Christ Church and is a mosque? Is this a Coptic mosque? Is it a Coptic Christian church?
No, it's a regular Muslim mosque. The area happens to be called Christ Church.
Oh, the area, not the mosque.
Okay. No, not the mosque.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you. I just wanted, because I was a little confused with what was happening. It's a terrible thing like that to happen to people who are praying and all that. Take care, Mujiz, and have a nice day.
Thank you. You too. Fakir from New Jersey, you're on the air.
How are you doing, Latrice?
Okay. It's okay. You, Treese.
Say it again?
It's you, Treese.
You, Treese. Okay, you, Treese. I apologize.
No problem.
Okay.
This happens to me all the time.
Okay. I heard a lot of criticism about that Congresswoman Omar calling her anti-Semitic. You know, we have a right to criticize our government. You know, being Americans, we have a right to criticize our government. But we don't have a right to criticize Israel. You know, Jimmy Carter is listed as an anti-Semite because he criticized Israel. You know, no one is perfect, but why every time someone criticizes the actions of Israel, are they demonized?
Well, this has been an ongoing issue, and it speaks to the power of any group or nation or, you know, any organization that amasses its power and can flex it to its liking without fear of retribution. So if, for example, in Israel, there are many people who feel, including the Prime Minister, Netanyahu, who feels that there's just too much criticism of Israel. It's like Donald Trump. He bursts out with these criticisms of the people who are criticizing. It's annoying, really, because it evades the central issues all the time. And the central issues have to do with the power equation, not only within Palestine, but outside in the regular world. Because the idea is to shape public opinion and the public outlook on what many people feel is a lopsided arrangement, a lopsided power arrangement within Palestine, which is called Israel today. But I think we focus on the wrong thing. This is it's almost like a trigger. You say something, and immediately it starts a fight, and then it mushrooms into a bigger fight, and then people are concerned about the fight, not the issue.
Mm-hmm.
We've not really seen a concerted effort to deal with the issue, not this distraction. So the question of criticizing Israel is a distraction to me. I see it that way. It's a distraction. It evades or attempts to evade the central issues involved. Now, I have a beef with Congresswoman Omar, and it has to do with how she handled and continues to handle things. Now, of course, she's a very smart, intelligent woman. You know, she's got degrees. She's got all kinds of credentials. All right, but that doesn't make you smart. And what I thought she would do is to get the lay of the land in Washington first. Get the lay of the land. Who is going to be your friend? Who is going to be your helpmate? Who is going to be your diehard enemy? You know, just take a little bit of time. The seat is barely warm, and you will use your time to figure out what's what and who's who. And therefore, how do you navigate a system coming in? You know it's going to be hostile toward you. Coming in, you know that. Why aggravate the situation? I'm not suggesting that she just, you know, shrivel away. Not at all. I say study. Study what you're up against. And, you know, it should never be the case where you first, you know, you say something and then you have to undo it and react to it and react to people reacting to it. It's very messy. It means that either she is strong-headed and not taking advice from people who might advise her well, or she doesn't have good advisors. But it seems that a lot of the confusion and the calamity that has accompanied her foray into congressional politics are completely unnecessary. All you just have to do, we know that you're smart, we know you're capable, we know you're going to come up with your own programs, we know that. And many people want to support her. But it seems in the last couple of, you know, flubs that we had, these were all unnecessary. They were unnecessary. Just bide your time and time your moves well. You don't have, it's like 2 months, not even 2 months, you're barely there. And that's there's right. All this confusion and calamity surrounding the congresswoman. That can't possibly be helpful. It does not diminish anything at all from your strength and from your vision and from what it is you want to do. It none of it is diminished. What I was hoping she would do as a very smart person is first get a lay of the land. Just figure out what's what. If you're in dire political trouble, who do you run to for help? What are you doing to shore up your new political base, which you have not yet delineated? Who is your base in Washington, D.C.? I know you're going to say Somalis in Washington, D.C. Great. All 16 of them. But on a broader issue, and you're now in an arena where you have to consider the big picture. You have to move far more intelligently. And it involves keeping quiet for a while. Just study and observe. Talk to people, study and observe. What do you think?
I think you're right. She should use those two ears better than she used one mouth.
I think she's a smart woman. I'm so upset that she doesn't get it. And you know, she feels a need to engage in fighting. That's not gonna win your cause.
No.
You know, it's not. It means that when you move deliberately. You move smartly. And nobody should see your hand. So I'm hoping for her that she has people around her who can tell her, look, not everything has to be a fight. what your, we have some things, some procedural issues that we must deal with. I'm not suggesting that she you know, fold up and run, but just take it easy for a while and get to learn the environment you're in, how to move in that environment. Who can best advise you about that? How to establish, even in Washington, D.C., you have no local establishment that is pushing you. You're from Minnesota. You know, she's doing some things that are quite disturbing to me, and I wish she would stop it, especially this business of fighting, you know, aggressively taunting through words. Just calm down a bit and figure this thing out. Figure how you ought to move. Thanks for calling in. Actually, that brings us to the end of our program today. And we'll see you next time. Goodbye.